And they absolutely have the whiff of capitalism. I mean, quite what Alan Titchmarsh's gardening denim smell of. I wouldn't have thought capitalism would be the first thing that springs to mind.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
This is, oh gosh, I sounded terribly authoritative and probably a bit noisy there. This is an off-air email special with Mulcairns and Garvey.
I don't know that I've done an email special with you before.
Well,
it's a big responsibility.
It's a big responsibility. Mm. And I don't know whether you're going to rise to the occasion,
Jane. I don't know if I'm up for it.
Because I suspect you were the kind of person who let the whole school down.
Frequently.
Quite frequently.
And my parents.
And your parents.
Yeah, which is particularly embarrassing since one of them worked at the school.
I know that, and I think that must have been... Well, they do still talk to you, I know, but, gosh, it's been a long old haul, hasn't it, bringing up Jane Mulcairns.
Did I tell you I went to the funeral of my old English teacher last week?
I don't know.
Oh, or the week before. I went to the funeral of my old English teacher,
who
was
very nice
incredibly formative.
Yeah.
So she not only taught me A-level English and... cast me in the drama productions and taught me debating and all of those things, but also taught me off the ledge for a lot of sixth form when I was just, you know, there was a lot of rebellion wanting to come out, which needed to be kept in order to stay in school. But it was lovely to go to her funeral and see her kids, some of whom were in my year, and all my old teachers who did comment on the fact that mainly it wasn't at all surprising that I had turned talking into part of my job.
Yeah. Okay. But it's a very sweet form of revenge, isn't it?
It really is. Also a very lazy form of revenge.
And that
the thing
well.
You just told me off for doing all the time. Well, now I just do it all the time still.
I have always wondered, though, what is it like to be at a school where a parent is a teacher? That's a very particular dynamic.
Yeah. So we were talking about it, actually, at the funeral. And my mum and I have talked about it quite a bit because I felt I had to behave better because I didn't want to embarrass her. So all the smoking on the field that I would have done, I tried to keep a lid on and sort of all the, you know, I still answered back and I was, it's hard to imagine, Jane, but I was quite truculent.
Oh, yeah.
Very hard to imagine, I know, being the entirely sunny person I am now.
Yeah, I mean,
but she said, interestingly, that she also behaved herself better because she didn't want to embarrass me.
That's a good point.
We do share some of those quite similarly truculent traits. And, I think she felt that there were situations in which she held her tongue and perhaps didn't stick her neck on the line because she didn't want to be, you know, a teacher who was maybe causing ructions when the kids were at the school.
Oh, no, I get that. I think that's a really interesting aspect of that. My first job was a medical records clerk in a hospital in Liverpool when I was just left uni. And my mum was the receptionist at the hospital. That's kind of how I got the job, let's be honest. It was a temporary contract. I didn't excel. But I remember seeing my mother in a whole new light because I saw her once coming out. Well, I actually met her by pure chance coming out of the tuck shop at the hospital with a load of licorice strings. And it's actually, I just thought, you're a figure of authority, but actually you spend your lunch hour hanging around in the tuck shop eating sweets with your mates. You suddenly realise, oh my God, this woman has a life outside the home. I had no idea. She even seems to have friends. Good Lord.
It's funny. We were driving from the funeral to the pub that we were all meeting in afterwards, and there was a pub near the school, near our old school, and we drove past and my mum just said, oh, and Jane Kirby and Anne Jones, which is the English teacher who'd passed away, and my old history teacher, said, oh, we used to go there on lunchtimes on a Friday for a jacket potato. And I just thought, I never knew that you went to the pub at lunchtime on a Friday. She said, we didn't drink, obviously, but...
Just had a jacket.
But I just, the idea of they were teachers, and they're in the pub on a Friday eating baked carbohydrates. Yeah, exactly. It's that thing of having a life, going out and gossiping with her colleagues on a Friday.
Mm.
which of course is perfectly normal and to be encouraged, but we didn't think of teachers like that.
It never even occurred to me on a Friday afternoon when we were sitting in a lesson that the teachers were as eager for 4 o'clock as you were. I mean, they like it here. They've chosen this.
It's sometimes coming on a weekend, they love it so much.
Yeah, I mean, you're so selfish and you're so self-involved at that age. It's just all about your own suffering, isn't it?
Yeah.
Perhaps I haven't changed all that much. Just for anybody listening outside the UK, a jacket potato is simply that. I mean, honestly, it's the height of sophistication, isn't it? I used to be quite slightly gone off them. Don't know why. Do you ever have a jacket?
No, I don't really. No, it's because you're a bit tired.
Yeah. Well, sorry. Also, you can't have them on a whim because they take about an hour and a quarter.
It's true. And a microwave jacket potato is no sort of jacket potato.
They're disgusting. No, and we used to have a spudgy-like in my shopping centre.
Spudulike.
And spudulike or spudgy-like is the greatest name for a chain of high street food emporiums. They went some years ago, didn't they?
They did. I wonder what happened.
I don't know, and I'm sorry.
Maybe it's when Carb's got a bad name.
It was Victoria Wood who called them Spudulike, wasn't it? The Italian version of. But it is only Britain could have, and possibly Ireland, could have a chain of food outlets just selling large potatoes. Anyway, there you go. If you've got fond memories of Spudulike, perhaps you met the love of your life in a branch of Spudulike, or you work there. I would
what
love
was your
to.
Your favourite topping?
My favourite topping, well, it's cheese and beans, isn't it?
Cheesy beans.
Yeah, it's all you ever need, really.
Mm. I don't mind a tuna sweet corn with some mayonnaise.
No, I don't like that.
Okay. Well, should we move on to the actual emails then?
Yeah, go on then.
And away from the potatoes.
Yeah. It's been a big day in Britain because, as we speak, and I should be honest with you, although you might be hearing this on a Wednesday, it's actually Tuesday still. It's been a long
I can't believe you pulled the curtain back on that one. I was going to pretend it was Wednesday.
No, I'm sticking. I came from the BBC. We try to be accurate.
Radical honesty.
And there's just a great headline here on the BBC News website, actually, although The Times is covering it too. North Korea TV censors Alan Titchmarsh's trousers. And this is just a slightly mysterious story about... No one knows how North Korean television has got hold of a 2010 edition of an Alan Titchmarsh gardening show. They're showing it in the morning on North Korean state television. And they don't like denim. So they've had to... They sort of blur out the trousers because they're deemed to be irresponsible. And
they smack of capitalism.
And they absolutely have the whiff of capitalism. I mean, quite what Alan Titchmarsh's gardening denim smell of. I wouldn't have thought capitalism would be the first thing that springs to mind. But anyway, but this is interesting. The Sunday Times revealed in 2014 that BBC Worldwide, that used to be the name of the corporation's commercial arm, BBC Studios, and the Foreign Office, were hoping to open the North Korean people's eyes to the world beyond the closed republic without offending the regime. And the idea was that the BBC would send programmes to North Korea which would be deemed suitable. And what they considered was Mr. Bean, EastEnders... I wouldn't have thought that would. Miss Marple or Poirot. An official said, we couldn't have sent Dad's Army, as that's about war. Well, yes.
Sort of.
Yes.
Only sort of.
Warmington-on-Sea. But Teletubbies could have been an option. Or The Good Life.
I thought Teletubbies was a little bit spooky, sort of possibly a little bit... Yeah. Like, it's pictures I've seen of North Korea.
That was, yeah, well, quite... There was also rather a sweet, quite camp... Tubby. Mm. So I'm not sure that would have gone down all that well in North Korea. But anyway, as far as I know, and as far as this article in today, Tuesday, reports, there was no official deal with North Korea to give them BBC programmes. So the mystery remains. How did they get hold of Garden Secrets?
Mm.
Who knows?
Spookily enough, I thought I saw Alan Titchmarsh on Sunday in Snape Maltings, where I was. It's this lovely little sort of arts centre.
Have you got
on the way back from Norfolk?
Where you're visiting gardens?
No, well, no. I mean, it was just. It was a nice place to stop off.
Okay. We all start that way, love.
It had. It's beautiful, Snape Maltings. It's sort of got a big concert hall, and it has got a lot of.
Where is
very
it?
Fancy. It's in Suffolk. It's on the way back from Southwold.
Oh, spooky Southwold.
And. Lovely, like a really fancy deli and cafe and whatnot. But there is a big home garden shop, which I went for a wander in, and I really thought I saw Alan Titchmarsh, but he looked quite young. So I had to Google, while I was looking at this man, I was Googling Alan Titchmarsh to see how grey he was right now. And this man, unless Alan Titchmarsh has had a recent dye job, wasn't Alan Titchmarsh. And I'm sure this man wondered... quite why I was doing so many laps of him.
Right. Just
with my phone.
He's a man, so he probably just thought you really fancied him.
Yeah.
Okay, what have you got?
So, we have had so many emails about funerals. and various aspects of funerals. But I wanted to read this one out from, she just calls herself a loyal listener. Mm-hmm. Doesn't want to, her name mentioned, doesn't want to offend the Freemasons, but funerals first.
I wouldn't worry too much.
My parents were Irish and both came from large families. We had no idea how many people would attend their funerals, so we had to do rough calculations regarding relatives and friends. This was complicated by the fact that sausage rolls and pickled onions, aka the beige buffet, would not suffice. A roast dinner plus dessert, wow, if not entirely expected, could be replaced by a large gammon and a side of beef, and obviously several different varieties of cooked potato. Our listener says the absence of either of the above catering options would be considered bad form. We went for the roast dinner.
I always think that's wise.
But for a funeral, a free bar is a must, says our listener. Mm. The bar bill alone for each of her parents' funerals was £2,500 each.
Bloody hell.
Do you know my family? Okay. Were they all there? And I attended a wake recently where a band was in attendance. Yes, they are pricey, she says. Unfortunately, Mum and Dad had the money to cover them, but they are wonderful celebrations. Mm. And as your other Irish contributor referred to attendees, you really don't know. You really do notice those who don't come, and it is considered bad form. Maybe a lot of people come for the roast dinner as well as the paying respects.
I would probably
a roast dinner for an unspecified amount of people, mm, plus a free bar is a fair old outlay, isn't it?
It is a considerable outlay. I mean, we're not far off the cost of a wedding there.
Yeah.
In fact, very similar in lots of ways. But probably a bit less tension in the air at a funeral or at a wake. Well, I love the idea of a roast dinner at an event like that. Susan says, love the podcast. I've been listening since Radio 4 days. Goodness me. I'm currently enjoying the Dublin-based comedy drama The Dry. Yeah, I've seen that on ITVX. That is very, very good. Great ensemble of funny and appalling characters, she says. Jane, are you related to Pom Boyd, who plays the mother Bernie? I'm not. don't know why you think I might be. I can't. It was a while ago since I watched that. Does she look like me or sound like me? Or is she called Garv? No, she's not. She's called Pom Boyd. So, no, I don't know. Tell me more about that. But I'm not related to her as far as I know.
And this is relating back to some emails the week before last, couple of weeks ago, about exchange stories. Emily says, in 1981, age 14, I went to Brittany on our school exchange. My friend Alison felt desperately homesick within days of arriving, but we hadn't, at that point, been taught the French word for homesickness. Instead, she managed to convey to her host family that she had a bad headache. A doctor was summoned. After a brief examination and very limited communication, he administered the standard French cure for headaches, a suppository. Needless to say, she hasn't been back to France since.
Okay, so they do that so much more often than we do. But my question is, and medical people will be able to answer this, perhaps even you will, Jane, with your, I'm going to say, expansive life experience. does pain relief work quicker?
Yeah.
Administered that way? It just as simple as that,
it gets into your bloodstream quicker.
Oh, so it's that simple?
Mm.
Okay. Right.
Mm.
I don't know what to say.
Yeah, I think, let's not get too medical. It's about to do with the membrane walls.
Okay, because this is not, as you may have noticed, it's not a medical podcast. But, Graham, grateful for the information, and I'll carry it with me through life. Sharon says, I was listening to your interview with Jeff Norcott, and this is interesting because it's about being a medical student at university. Jeff Norcott's documentary about whether it was worth it going to university these days, bearing in mind the loans and just the tough time that a lot of students have had lately, is on the BBC iPlayer, and we talked to Jeff last week. Sharon says, I started uni in the early noughties. I was doing medicine. My parents were not in a situation to help me financially, so I was allowed the maximum student loan, and my fees, which were at the time around £3,000 a year, were paid by the state. I worked full-time in a clothes shop back home during my holidays for the first couple of years, and that gave me enough. I would have struggled to work term time as the course was pretty full-on. No humanities-style 9 hours a week for us. I would say my finances were meagre but sufficient. I didn't have to think twice about going on nights out at student clubs where you can get a shot for 50p, but I did have to turn down outings to football matches and ski trips. I only felt hard done by when I compared myself to my peers. And I didn't know this, but she says lots had their student loans in an ISA while their parents gave them an allowance and paid their rent. I suppose that is an option. I never thought of that. Many frequently spent their holidays skiing and travelling for many weeks at a time, not picking up hangers from the floor of a changing room. Some had never had a job in any capacity, which I struggle to fathom, as all my school friends had Saturday jobs. Things did get tight towards the end of my degree. From memory, our final year was 48 weeks, so no time to work outside it and earn any money. We were also on rotations and attachments with the expectation of being able to get ourselves there, so we were often expected to have cars. I applied for a hardship loan for £500, which was initially rejected. I broke down in tears when I learnt that my very rich but useless with money housemate had got one. Her father was an expert at moving money around efficiently. Oh, dear. Sharon, I mean, I really appreciate that insight. And I know that things have obviously, this is some time ago. But she says now, working crazy hours meant I didn't have the chance to spend much, and those credit cards and bank loans were cleared within 6 months.
Oh, well done.
Juniors these days don't get their accommodation paid for, and their wages adjusted for inflation are around 30% less. In fact, the truth is their pay slips look similar to mine from 20 years ago, although the cost of living is obviously so much higher. That is true. I mean, I know you can look at it and it doesn't look as though doctors are poorly paid, but actually it's not all that easy at all. Sharon, thank you for that.
I know, and I think that's probably the same with many professions when you look at what people are paid at entry-level jobs now. They're probably exactly the same as they were 20 years ago. Certainly in the media, I would say that's true as well.
Yeah, I think
it is
true.
You look at young people starting out now and unless they have people helping them or somewhere to live where they can live cheaply or rent-free. It's really difficult.
I think starting in the media now is almost... I mean, I was only able to do it because I got housing benefit and I was living in a bedsit in, in the Midlands. So my costs were not that high. How I'd get into the media now if I were me back then, if that makes any sense, I haven't got a clue.
No. No. I mean, it's prohibitive.
Yeah.
Because starting salaries are so low. Or you don't even have a salary. Shift work, whatever.
No, I mean,
internships.
Internships where you don't get paid. I mean, that's
no,
a farce.
Exactly. Interestingly, we were talking about this university question with my friends at the weekend. All of us did go to university because we sort of came from families where education was very much, you know, encouraged, and our parents had been the first in their families to go to university, so it was sort of seen as a thing you did. And we were talking about whether we would go now. And actually, this is an interesting email from a listener who didn't go to university. It's a long email, and forgive me for not reading all of it out, because it's quite detailed about her own very specific experiences. But she went to a very academic school, but chose not to go to university. And has now got a very successful job in PR. In fact, is global head of PR at a big marketing agency. And our listener says, while I've had a lot of positive experience from not going to university, growing up faster, no student debt, quicker career progression, there is a flip side. And I'm certainly not anti-university. The older I get, the more I regret missing out on some of the formative social experiences that university brings. When I'm in a group of people reminiscing about university days, which, to be fair, happens far less frequently when you're hurtling towards 40, she says, I feel sad to have nothing to contribute. And honestly, when as an item of small talk, an acquaintance or colleague asks where I went to university, I long to say Nottingham or Leeds and move on, rather than trotting out my well-rehearsed anecdote about the US not working out. So she did go to university briefly in the US, but didn't enjoy it. Mm-hmm. However, with the cost of university being what it is nowadays, it's a large price to pay for a social experience and an easy question to answer. I don't wish to be glib, as I know there are many professions a lot more important to the world than PR, which require a degree, but I just think we need some nuance in how we approach the subject. And I think that it's so true. It is a social experience, but it's a very expensive one. And I think there are other, you know, there should be other social experiences that you can have
that are broadly similar.
Yeah.
But don't, yeah, I mean, it doesn't seem, I don't know. My children, the youngest one is just about to finish at university, which, by the way, we can't discuss because when that topic comes up, everybody gets emotional, so we can't go there. But she has got to confront her future. And I think in some ways it can just extend your childhood a little bit if you're fortunate.
Yeah.
If you are very fortunate, then it can. And you can explore issues and topics that you might otherwise not have bumped up against. I know I certainly did do that, although university wasn't a particular highlight for me. I was certainly a bit socially out of my depth at times, I think. But I was made to think about things that I wouldn't otherwise have thought about. And I was also with a lot of people who were a lot cleverer than me and a lot more able in the subject. And that can also be chastening and useful, can't it?
Absolutely, absolutely.
But sometimes I just think it does mean that the actual real life, because it does have to start at some point, it just puts it off a bit.
Yeah, there's a bit of arrested development that goes with it. Yeah. I have to say, I had an incredible 3 years and learnt a lot. Academically, learnt how to think, learnt how to deal with a lot of things, edited a newspaper, played football, made great friends. I loved it.
Did you edit the student newspaper?
I did.
Yeah. What was it called?
Varsity.
Oh, Varsity. Which university was this?
Cambridge.
Varsity. Why didn't they call it university?
Because they don't speak like that.
That's what they called it, Varsity.
University.
Okay. Do you know what,
Jane? I don't speak like that.
No, but this is interesting because I have known you for a fair time now. You have never mentioned that you went to Cambridge until now. So that, I think, makes you unique amongst people who went to Oxford or Cambridge.
Because it's an old joke, isn't
it's
it?
But it's an old joke because it's a cliche, and cliches are cliches because they're true. People normally can't wait to tell you. Why have you held back?
I don't think you ever asked, and it's not something I feel it's necessary to tell people unless they ask.
But most generally, people don't ask, and you still get told.
I do think it's been incredibly helpful to my career because I think particularly when you're starting out trying to get things like work experience, I think it's very easy for them to look at an application or a letter and just say, okay, that person is possibly, competent and academically able. It doesn't mean you're any good at journalism, but it helped me get onto a postgraduate degree and then it helped me get work experience. So it helped me get a foot in the door. But interestingly, also, nobody asked me where I went to university for about the first 10 years of my career.
That must have been frustrating. You'd be dying to tell them.
It's in my pocket. Can't I show you my degree certificate? No, because I don't think it's important. It doesn't make any difference how good you are as a journalist. And I think I love the fact that nobody ever asked because, one of my editors knew me for 3 years before he realised that he went to Cambridge too. And we just never talked about it. But I thought that was really nice because, it should be on how good you are at doing the job and,
Well, of course it should be.
Yeah. I'm proud of it. I'm really proud of it. I'm not ashamed of it. I'm really proud of it. And I had a wonderful time. But I think it's a very specific experience and it is incredibly well funded and very well resourced. And, I got there for no money. I mean, it was still no fees when I was there. And I feel so fortunate to have had that experience for no money. If I had to pay a lot of money for it, I don't know that I'd have done it because my parents would have been able to afford it. I wouldn't have wanted to saddle myself with that much debt. But it was an incredibly unique and wonderful environment. And
I've only been to Cambridge a few times. I mean, it is astonishingly beautiful.
It's really pretty, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, it's a bit more than pretty. It depends when you're seeing it. I mean, times of year, times of day. But, I mean, just astonishing.
Yeah.
Not quite the real world.
No. Well, that's also why I quite enjoyed it, because it's not the real world for 3 years. And when did you get the opportunity to live sort of out of time for 3 years? I just thought I was very grudging about going because I wanted to go to a big northern university and go to lots of nightclubs. But anyway, I actually do, after a long time of not going back, I go back quite a lot now because Dorothy Byrne, who you may know, who's the head of Channel 4 News and Current Affairs, is now the president of my former college and has basically corralled me into doing all sorts of alumni things because, and basically, I would do anything she tells me because she's a very formidable woman.
She is a woman who said some quite important things about the media and how it operates, isn't she?
Yeah.
I think she's probably put the right noses out of joint.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. She's mischievous.
More power
she's
to
incredibly
her.
Incredibly mischievous. And I'd quite like to be her when I grow up.
Okay.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Rising sea levels, extreme weather patterns, extinctions of species. Our planet needs protecting. I'm Adam Vaughan, the environment editor for The Times, and this is Planet Hope from The Times, in partnership with Rolex and its Perpetual Planet Initiative. In this podcast, we hear from leading experts from around the world who are committed to finding solutions. These explorers, scientists, entrepreneurs, and citizens are committed to a common goal, to protect our home, Earth. Listen now wherever you get your podcasts.
We've been perhaps not hard on the Freemasons exactly, but
I think they're going to be okay.
I think they'll be fine. But Caroline writes to say, they are a society of like-minded people with secrets. They are not a secret society.
Ooh, interesting. Okay.
My husband has attended meetings for over 30 years, and in that time, I have accompanied him to ladies' nights and several other social events. At one of these ladies' nights, I had to speak on behalf of the wives, as my husband Tom was in the chair. He was the master of the lodge that year. The Masons silently raise a lot of money for local and worldwide charities. Teddy's for Loving Care is a commonly known one on children's wards. Also Masonic Widows, not Windows, Masonic Widows, and countless medical fundraisers. There are ladies' lodges. They're popular and contribute in the same way as their male counterparts. Hope this is of help, says Caroline. And Caroline, it is, and thank you very much for that. I like that. Like-minded people with secrets, not a secret society.
Like-minded people with secrets. Maybe that's a title for a book. We were going to talk about pensions, weren't we? So can I...
Oh, yeah.
I was also aware that we were talking about WASPy women with a presumption that people might know what we were talking about, which lots of our international listeners may not. Can I have a bash
is
it, at
Is
quickly,
a brief explainer
brief
coming
explainer.
Up?
Well, just because I also... It was helpful to me to go and read exactly what we were talking about. So WASPy women are women who whose state pension age, the age that they can draw their state pension, was raised over a specific time between 2010 and 2020, supposedly, but then it was brought forward a bit by successive governments, and it meant that some women had to work for longer or live on less for several years. And there has been this proposal to compensate them to the tune of, she says, turning her pages,
well,
trying
potentially,
to find the number.
It was
potentially
up to 10 grand, I think. But yeah. I think that would be just about unaffordable.
So obviously there's a campaign for the WASPy. The Women Against State Pension Inequality have been lobbying the government for many years about this, and they reckon 2.6 million women were affected by it.
Do you know, I was out with a friend last night who said that she thought one of the problems with WASPy women, because I mentioned earlier in the week that so many people are so unpleasant about them, is actually the name WASPy.
WASPy women.
And perhaps something could be done about that. By the way, I don't know if you know, I've no idea what kind of provision there is for state pensions in the United States.
No.
What do you get? When do you get it? Do women and men retire at the same age?
I don't know.
Okay.
You pay into your 401k, which is a private pension. I don't know what you get from the state. Because I didn't earn American money for very long while I was there, and I sort of knew that I probably wouldn't stay for the rest of my life. Pensions was something I just didn't get involved in. Okay. I mean, I didn't have healthcare for most of the time I lived there, so definitely wasn't getting a pension.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I know. Entry. Reckless.
You are quite reckless. Carry on.
So, interestingly, we were talking about there being pushback against the WASPy women, and some of that pushback today comes from one of my esteemed Times colleagues.
Is that Mr.
William Hague?
Lord William Hague.
Lord William Hague, who was basically the Prime Minister who brought in...
Well, he wasn't the Prime Minister, was he?
No, he was... he was the... he wasn't. He wasn't ever the Prime Minister, which is part of the point. He was responsible for being in Parliament when the Pensions Act...
Yeah,
because
what his role was. Don't worry, Jane, because I've read that article too and I can't remember.
Anyway, he says that he doesn't think that this merits compensation adding up to the amount that people are claiming it should. He says many MPs want to please constituents who complain to them, so they campaign for large compensation while often arguing for lower taxes at the same time.
You can't help both.
And as he does rightly say, it's easier for me. one who's long since stopped running for election, blurt out the truth as I see it. He basically is saying that the compensation would have to be paid by current taxpayers. Mm. You know, those of us who are never going to get to retire. There's a chart on that BBC news story. I just couldn't look at it because it's when are you going to retire? 105.
Exactly.
But I think it is an interesting point that current taxpayers who are going to have a much later retirement age would be paying into the pot. But I also think that...
I'm really conflicted on this one.
Yeah.
I do have sympathy for these women. I think some of them, you could have argued, should have known. I think some of the publicity around the change was really poor. Mm. It wasn't properly targeted.
And then also the change was changed.
Yes, and then the change was changed. Mm. And that's when the marketing around it got even worse, as far as I understand. Also, some of these women were just so preoccupied with the kind of responsibilities that do always, it seems, fall to women,
yep.
i.e. caring for older relatives, etc.
Yep.
And also, it's not a level playing field because the women never earned as much as the men in the first place. So their pensions were never... we all know this.
Well, this is the thing. You're looking at women who were born in the 1950s and they were never paid as much as men. They probably would have taken quite a few years out of their working lives, yeah. if not big chunks of their working lives, to raise their children.
For other kinds of care.
Yeah. And then you think, you don't want to give them a few extra grand at the end for all of those years of missing out on salaries.
Mm. But then, as you say, should the young people in their 20s who will, let's be honest, never get a state pension, I don't think they can, should they have to fork out for this?
Mm.
Okay.
As never being able to buy a house or any of the other things.
Never buy a house. No, you can forget that. I mean, that's the problem.
Yeah.
So answers on a postcard, please, to Jane and Fee at times.radio. What about American pension arrangements? Well, I'm going to throw that one over to Rena, who has emailed from the States. I moved from London to Phoenix, Arizona, 25 years ago, she says. I do have friendships here, but they lack depth. I mean, this is Rena talking, not me. My American friends tend to overshare about their lives. Is that your experience?
We'll come on to that.
Okay. And are not interested in anything out of their direct sight. They are lovely, but I can't talk to them about books or films that I enjoy. We can't talk about the weather or the news. Is that because the weather is just always the same in Phoenix? It probably is, actually. I don't know why you can't talk about the news. I am terrified, says Rena, of another Trump presidency. Oh, I see. But they don't care, as it really has no effect on their daily life. So our interactions are superficial but necessary. She says she's stayed friends with the girls she met at 16 doing A-levels at Greenhill College in Harrow. So a shout-out to them, Rena. I'm sure they'll know who they are. We've remained firm ever since. Pop culture, music, bad telly, books, films, crushes and family. The friends that share your history are the ones that truly know you. It's a connection I didn't appreciate until I came over here. Thank you for that, Rena. I think that's... And she did say she came over at Christmas and it was just wonderful. She met up with them all again and they were just back to where they started. But,
yeah.
Okay, let's get the Mulcairn's take on Americans and friendships and oversharing.
I do think they are culturally different and I think the oversharing thing, particularly amongst women, is a particular trait.
Well, can
I
you give me an example?
People are just much quicker to tell you about their feelings. Even people in England will say, I think, whereas in America people say, I feel. It's a lot about feelings. People talk about their feelings and will go pretty deep into their own personal experiences quite early on with you. But I will say I was very fortunate. I did have a group of people that I could talk to about books and film. Books in particular. I was in the most amazing book club in New York with incredibly dynamic, intelligent, kind, inspiring women who I'm still in a WhatsApp group with and I still talk to all the time. And I did make very deep friendships. But I think the difference is we do have a different sense of humour. It takes you a while to find the people who are really on your wavelength and get your sense of humour. And I will say, and this is a terrible generalisation, they don't banter as well in America. Mm-hmm. So that sort of very British thing where you show affection by being a bit savage and sort of
have
tossing
you worked along with my producing team. Bloody hell.
Tossing it backwards and forwards. It's just a different sort of sense of humour. So you do have to seek out those people. And when you find them, lasso them and hold on to them.
Yeah. Yes, because so what Rena's saying and what you're saying is that they're not unfriendly. That's really
incredibly
unfair.
Friendly. Yeah, okay. Incredibly friendly. But, very kind.
Yes, but slightly baffled by our approach to life.
Yeah. Mm. You know, they don't really understand self-deprecation. a lot of people did say, why would you say those things about yourself?
Oh, really? Oh,
God. Yeah.
I don't think I'd last long there. Right, I'm going to allow you one more.
Oh, gosh.
Can you pick one? Well, I'm just again looking at the time.
The pressure.
Young Hannah's got to get home. She's got a life.
Oh, can I read this one?
Yeah. Whatever it is.
This is from Sarah, who says, I had to delve into that drawer in an attempt to find the super glue, which ended in getting the whole drawer out in a vain attempt to close it again.
Okay, I love this.
And Sarah's list of discoveries in that drawer. 18 hairbands, 8 hand creams, 12 batteries, dead or alive, no idea, a gang of badges and pins from various trips, 23 keys, 7 unidentifiable, 5 lighters in a non-smoking household, a kazoo...
Everyone's got one of those.
Everyone's got one. An energy-saving gizmo, a false moustache, various amusing passport photos, 3 packets of wildflower seed mix, and the super glue that had dried out.
Right. I think that's brilliant. Perhaps people could tell us what's in their drawers.
I call it a dad drawer because it is just one of those things that has all of your dad's bits in it. And it doesn't matter. I haven't lived with my parents for many, many years.
That's good to know.
But I, whenever... And I've not lived places for very long, and then suddenly 6 months later, you've got a drawer full of old coins and lighters, kazoos, moustaches and super glue, and you don't know where it's come from.
Have you got a drawer with string in it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I've got string. I've got string, but why I've got string?
And some rubber bands. I don't know where they came from.
And then many, many Christmases ago, my mum sent me 200 metres of cling film. I think I finished it, and now she sent me another 2. I got it for Christmas this year.
Thank goodness.
In fact, I think I posed for a merry photograph on Christmas morning. Oh, it's quite hard to know what face to pull when you open up your jumbo Lakeland cling film offering. But hey, it's what Christmas is all about. I don't know why I'm talking about it.
Buying in bulk.
We're in March. Let's just forget I ever mentioned it.
You've got how many? 9 months to get through this one for the next year.
Okay, thank you very much. And thank you, Jane.
Thank you.
Lovely to see you. And thanks for your emails. Keep them coming. Jane and Fee at times.radio. Fee is back next week, but Jane and I are back tomorrow, your time, which will be Thursday in the real world. Well done for getting to the end of another episode of Off Air with Jane Garvey and Fee Glover. Our Times Radio producer is Rosie Cutler, and the podcast executive producer is Henry Tribe.
And don't forget, there is even more of us every afternoon on Times Radio. It's Monday to Thursday, 3 till 5. You can pop us on when you're pottering around the house or heading out in the car on the school run.
Or running a bank. Thank you for joining us, and we hope you can join us again on Off Air very soon.
Don't be so silly.
Running a bank?
I know, lady.
A lady listener.
I know, sorry.